It is always my honor to introduce Dr. Richard Novak. He is head of the Moderna trial and on the telephone with us right now. You're not here. I did this on purpose. Not ever on Super Bowl Sunday. So thank you very much for joining us again on a Sunday. However, Dr. Novak, I appreciate it.
My pleasure, Steve. Happy to be here.
Our telephone number, 312-981-7200. This guy knows stuff, 312-981-7200. Or you could text, or of course, we love it when you call. Dr. Novak, there was just a story, I think it was yesterday, might have been today, in the New York Times. And I had been hearing about this, the prospect of intranasal vaccines as opposed to the intramuscular vaccines, I believe that's the terminology, that we currently get. It's been tried out on a variety of species, including domestic ferrets. And ferrets are susceptible, as are all members of that family called the mustelid family. They are susceptible to SARS viruses in general, including COVID-19. And it's worked well for them. And I think there are trials with humans that are going on right now around the world, including in America. Is this a prospect that we could look at as being a more practical prospect?
Well, there are a lot of advantages to an intranasal vaccine. First of all, there's no shots. It's just a spray. And the idea is that you're trying to promote immunity just at the mucosal surfaces, which is like the lining of your nose and the lining of your lungs and the other mucosal surfaces. So when you give a vaccine by that route, you're really triggering immune response at those areas rather than trying to create an immune response throughout the entire body, although it does enter the circulation and you do get an overall immune response, but it really focuses immune response on your mucosal surfaces, which is where viruses enter the body.
So that would be, to me, it would seem to be a good thing, and also people that are vaccine hesitant, even though it is a vaccine, may not view it as a vaccine and therefore may finally get vaccinated.
Yeah, it's possible. I mean, it's not a new idea with coronavirus or COVID-19. Intranasal vaccines have been looked at for quite a while, and there actually is one on the market for influenza for children that's been available for a number of years now. It doesn't get much uptake, but it is available.
So do you think this will be the future? And is you may not know what the other companies are doing. You might, but you probably know what your company, Moderna, is up to.
Moderna is working on moving towards developing a variant vaccine for Omicron, but they may have other things going on that I'm unaware of. I know they're working on other vaccines, such as for influenza and other respiratory viruses. I think that intranasal vaccines are a great idea, but we won't know if it's going to replace what we currently do unless you do a comparative clinical trial and show good outcomes.
Would a nasal vaccine, and I'm going to try to catch up with some text here, would a nasal vaccine alleviate the anaphylactic allergic response that some people have?
Not necessarily. You still may get an allergic reaction. Hopefully, it'll be local in the upper airways where the vaccine is being administered. But it doesn't mean you won't have any reaction.
Anaphylactic is true allergic responses to the vaccines that we've seen. Are we seeing those? Are you seeing those? Or is that such a small minority of people?
That's very rare. We've not seen any of those in the people in the vaccine trials. It's reported, but it's really quite infrequent, like 1 in 100,000 or something in that range.
Another question here. I was in a salon wearing my KN95 correctly and tightly. The hairdresser got some spray mist on my face. How protected was I from the virus? I don't know what she means by spray mist. I'm thinking of misting the hair, which would not be, I don't think, consequential. So I'm guessing that the hairdresser must have sneezed or something to that effect.
Yeah. Well, KN95 is certainly better than a surgical mask. It's not quite as good as an N95, but it's pretty good. The main difference is that it's not fitted specifically for each person. You buy a standard issue mask, and if you're when we issue N95 masks, at least in the medical setting, you have to be fitted for them. So they're different sizes, and they test it by putting the mask on, and then they have a spray of something that you can taste. If it gets through the mask, you'll taste it. So it's a way of testing whether or not the mask is protecting or not.
Interesting. Our phone number, 312-981-7200, Dr. Richard Novak, in charge of, head of, the guy who is the dude. I like that title the best, really, of the Moderna trial is here. I want to ask you about, yes, Omicron, of course I do. And also natural immunity that's happening now. I mean, are we finally getting to the point, you probably get this question 20 times a day, where we have an endemic? Are we there yet? Those questions and yours, your questions, all next on WGN. Steve Dale with Dr. Richard Novak here, head of the Moderna trial. Our phone number, 312-981-7200. You can call or you can text. And in fact, Vern has called. Vern, welcome to WGN. Hi.
Hello.
Hi. What's your question?
My brother-in-law, who's in his 33, something like that. I'm a little bit older. I've had my shots and my booster and everything. I was done back in the fall. He, after getting his shot, after a series of weeks through the fall, just kept on having bad symptoms of headaches and just run down and everything and this and that. And they're trying to figure it out. They couldn't figure it out. And here about a week and a half ago, 2 weeks ago, they determined he had developed MS, and that it was probably, you know, kick-started by the vaccine.
Hmm. Okay.
And that's all. I don't know how this.
No, interesting question. Dr. Novak, is that a possibility?
Well, there isn't any evidence that the vaccine can trigger MS. In fact, there's a recent study that showed that MS appears to be associated with Epstein-Barr virus, and that's a virus that causes mononucleosis. And virtually everybody gets exposed to Epstein-Barr virus at some point in their life, and a subgroup of them seems to go on to develop MS. And it is an autoimmune type of illness, so that virus is triggering something. I've not seen any evidence that the coronavirus vaccines are doing that.
Okay. I've got one question here. I'll make that two. Make that three. And these people are all asking the same thing. Are we close to herd immunity? Or a term that I think is perhaps more accurate, community immunity. That's what everyone wants to know. Are we in, and you'll explain what this means in a second, are we actually entering the endemic phase of the pandemic?
Well, I wish that we were. I think it's too soon to tell, frankly.
Darn it! That's not the answer I wanted.
Well, it's not the answer I want either, but the truth is that there's still a pretty high likelihood that we'll see at least another variant of the virus. There are detailed studies now from other countries that looked at cross-immunity between Omicron and other virus exposures, and it turns out that if you're exposed to Omicron, you have excellent immunity against Omicron, but you have really poor immunity against the other earlier variants. And the same is true vice versa, that if you are exposed to an earlier variant of the virus, that you, as we know, you're still susceptible to Omicron. It doesn't give you much protection. The best protection, actually, is if you were infected with a virus with prior doses of the vaccine, or got the vaccine, got infected, then got vaccine. That immunity is really broad, which means it covers a lot of different variants, and it's sustained. You get really very high levels of immunity. So I wish I could tell you that we're in that we're at herd immunity, but the fact is that the viruses are, that we're seeing now have evolved to escape our immune responses. So the earlier immune responses that people develop from exposure are not protecting them against these newer viruses.
So I have an interesting text here that my neurologist, it says, or my neurologist friend, said that the vaccine can kickstart MS. The vaccine doesn't cause MS, but if it's coming anyway, it will come sooner, is I believe what they're saying here. It's true. Check with other neurologists. Interesting point. I don't know whether that's true or not. And Dr. Novak, as you said, you hadn't heard that. I want to ask you about Omicron and the stealth BA2 variant. So the stealth variant has taken over in some other countries. Is it going to happen here, or is that unlikely to happen here?
Well, so it is apparently more contagious than the first Omicron variant. And for that reason, it's more likely to overtake the first Omicron variant. And we'll probably see it in the United States. There, actually, it's already been reported.
Right.
I think they sequenced it at Northwestern. So we're likely to see it. Whether or not it's going to cause a major bump or not in a surge as we saw with Omicron, I think it's unlikely because it's so similar to Omicron in many ways that the immune response to Omicron is likely to control infection from that stealth virus. But time will tell. I mean, it's premature to know for sure.
Do you think the number of people that have had Omicron is actually underreported for several different reasons? First, some people can be asymptomatic, so they have no idea they had the virus. Secondly, okay, they didn't feel quite right. They may have had the sniffles, a sore throat for sure, but they really didn't do anything about it or assumed it was a common cold and therefore didn't think anything could be done about it. And never got tested. And the third group would be those that went to Walgreens or CVS and picked up one of those tests or somewhere else, and maybe via Amazon and got one of those tests, but they have no one to report it to that they tested positive. So do you think that, in fact, many more people had Omicron than what has been reported, not only in Chicago, but the United States?
I think absolutely that's the case because as you pointed out, people are getting home test kits and they don't report those results. So they had a relatively mild illness. They may have tested positive and they don't report that to anybody. So those are cases that go uncounted. In addition to that, there's just the tests are less than 100% sensitive. And so it's not unusual that people may have a case of COVID and test negative repeatedly, particularly with Omicron, because of the tests don't work quite as well. Even though the companies report they're just as good, in reality, I've seen a number of people who have tested repeatedly negative by the antigen test, and then they go and get a positive PCR.
What is the, if the tests are not going to be accurate, what would be the advantage of testing?
Well, it's helpful if it's positive. If you have an upper respiratory infection and you test positive, the likelihood, especially in an era where we're seeing a lot of when surge of Omicron, the likelihood is very high that that's a true positive and you've probably got it. If you test negative and you still have symptoms of a respiratory infection, it could be Omicron. Actually, there was a study that was just published in JAMA that showed they looked at people who reported a respiratory illness and thought they had COVID, and they went back and tested them for antibodies to see if they're actually exposed to the virus. And only about 50% of the people that thought they had COVID but never got tested turned out to actually have had it. Hmm. So there are a substantial number of people who are out there who think they have COVID and don't.
So it kind of works both ways. This listener says, my ears have been ringing since my second shot of Pfizer. Why and when will it stop? Do you have any idea?
I've heard that that scenario from other people as well, with the ringing in the ears. They might be best served by going to see their doctor, or they might benefit from a course of steroids or prednisone to see if it will make it go away.
Now, Israel, in some cases, has, I would argue anyway, been ahead of America. They are now suggesting that a certain members of their population, immune-suppressed individuals, and I believe those over 65, get a second booster. Some people have been now boosted. It's been 5 or 6 months, which is what Israel says. If it's been 6 months or so, it's time for yet another booster. The CDC hasn't really weighed in on that yet, except they are now suggesting it, I believe, for immune-suppressed individuals. Are we close to the point where more and more people in our population ought to have a second booster? I would argue our government has played catch-up in some ways to at least what some other countries have recommended.
Yes, well, you're right. Israel is recommending that now for those groups, and we are recommending another booster for people who are severely immunosuppressed. We may get to that point, but frankly, there just isn't any study yet done to show that that's beneficial. What the Israelis showed was you get a really substantial boost in immunity from the additional dose. But it's the problem is that your response is decline with each subsequent dose. Once you get into a certain level, you don't get the same bump as you got with the earlier boost. So there's a point of diminishing returns, and we just don't know what that is.
All right. Well, I always appreciate you joining us on Sundays. I'm sorry if I didn't get to some of your questions. Dr. Novak, thank you so much. I appreciate it.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
And may I add, I appreciate your service in conducting the trials and doing everything not only yourself, but your colleagues are doing as well. So thank you very, very much.
I'll pass it on to them. Thanks.